If you need to contact Narcotics Anonymous or are interested in our sponsorship Behind the Walls program, please contact ARSC Regional H&I, P.O. Box 1351, Phoenix, Arizona 85001. The following episode features an incarcerated member of Narcotics Anonymous that is active in his recovery, sharing his experience, strength, and hope.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, my name's Ben, and I'm an addict. I feel so honored to be able to do this. Just being able to sit in and see you guys function as a meeting on the outside brings a whole new perspective and just an idea of what it looks like and stuff out there. So it's a pretty cool experience to be able to hear, like, talk about treasury, you know, talk about literature tables. I don't go black like that. Mm-hmm. Talk about literature tables and stuff. So I'm honored to be here tonight and to be in this meeting with you all and talk to you a little bit about my experience, strength, and hope, and what it's like, what it used to be like, and what it's like today. So my clean date is 1/25/17, and I actually thank you. I actually got clean in prison and been incarcerated now for a little over 8 years. And I'll tell you a little bit about my journey and stuff, how I got here, and like what I do and stuff. When I first came to the program, as far as the fellowship and stuff goes, they told me that drugs was a small symptom of my problem and everything. And that was hard for me to concept that. It really was, because I didn't know why I used until I came to the fellowship and really started to discover out who I was and why I did what I did. You know, it was a very hard battle for me. So, the characteristics as far as being an addict and stuff, you know, it talks about in step one is the compulsion and obsession. And for me, as I've grown in recovery, I'm able to today look back and start to identify more and more as I continue about my past life as far as what I've actually been compulsive in and obsessed over, as far as like I found out that my disease was well alive way before I ever took the first drug. That's what I'm trying to say there. I started off, I came from a real small town. A little bit about my backstory and stuff. I was the youngest of all my brothers. There's all brothers, all boys in the family. And my mom and dad was at home. And I remember at a very young age and stuff, like always just being beat up by my brothers, you know, never fitting in, you know, never feeling like I was accepted in any part, you know, like just always felt like I was a tag along. And my parents, I would go crying to them about what they was doing to me and stuff. And then they would ignore me. And then my brothers, they just beat me up even more and stuff. So it was very hard from the very start, you know, like to really figure out, like, this is like when my whole belief system and stuff is getting developed inside of me and stuff, you know. So at a very young age, you know, like, I was learning a lot of things, you know, like that isn't very natural, you know, ain't very normal and stuff. So my brother closest to me, he was the one that really hurt me the most, I would say, out of all my brothers. My other brother was a little bit older than me and stuff, but the one closest to me was very close to me in age. And he would get in rages and stuff, and we shared a bedroom together and stuff, and like he would beat me up all the time. And every time I felt like I would speak my voice, my opinion, like it just seemed like the whole time he would just knock me down and stuff, you know. Just so I learned at a very young age to keep my mouth shut and just to keep my problems inside and stuff. Never talk about like what I'm going through or my opinion on things and stuff. So when I go to school, I don't really feel like I fit in there either. And that's just awkward and stuff, you know. Like I go to school and like I want to be involved with like the kids playing and everything, you know, and it just doesn't feel right. You know, I just feel different than what they are. And, That happened like all the way up through like school and everything. Well, as I get older and stuff, my brothers, people that I really look up to and stuff and like want their acceptance and stuff, you know, they started to use and stuff in their daily lives. So I felt like if I used with them, they'd maybe accept me and stuff, you know. So I started drinking along with them and everything, you know, as they would have parties and stuff, I'd start drinking. And then I noticed that when I would drink and stuff that I felt a lot more comfortable. Like it took that edge off, you know, that feeling of not being accepted, you know. So that progressed and stuff into using other things and stuff. But when I was born, like I was in my babysitters, which was already my babysitters for my brothers and stuff, like that environment was very very negative in the sense of there was a lot of illegal activity and stuff that went on. And so at a very young age, like I was very numb to the idea, you know, of like drugs was and stuff, you know, like I didn't see them like as a problem or nothing, you know. And it wasn't until like I got older and stuff, you know, like going through the DARE program and stuff, I even knew what it was and stuff, you know, like it was there, but I was just numb to it because it was always around. So I just felt like it was normal. I felt like it was normal for people to have tons of drugs and stuff around the house and just be using them and stuff all the time. I thought that's just what people did. So getting older, I start to progress, you know, my addiction starts to progress and I start to use other drugs and stuff and I start experimenting, you know, with some weed here and there, and then I start experimenting with some cocaine, and then I get into the heroin and stuff. And that's when I was in high school. My parents, they wasn't around very much. My mom worked third shift. My dad worked out of state every week, so we was pretty much there to defend for ourselves. So as far as parental guidance and stuff, I really didn't have too much. I could do pretty much anything I wanted when I wanted and stuff, and that's very scary, especially for an individual, you know, that has no concept of what life's supposed to be about and what you're supposed to be doing and stuff, you know. Like I just felt like I was just burning money and didn't even care about it and stuff, you know. Like I didn't feel like there was any consequences to my actions or anything like that. So I take and I graduate high school. And I ended up having my first child when I graduated high school. And at this time, you know, I got a job. I'm working in a body shop, and my addiction is pretty full blown at this particular point in time. And I felt as if like I still had it under control. I felt like I could still manage, you know. I didn't identify with being an addict whatsoever. So I take and I get an apartment, and me and my son and his mother move in together, and we're having a relationship. And I end up bringing her into the mix, you know. I end up bringing her down with me and stuff, you know. I start thinking that I'm gonna lose her, so I manipulate the idea, you know, like I'll get her hooked on drugs and then I can keep her hostage, you know. And that's how I do as an addict and stuff, you know. Like if I feel like I'm gonna lose something, then I want to keep a hold of it. I'll use everything at my means in order to do it and stuff. And that's scary. So we ended up having a relationship for probably about 2 years, and then ended up getting split up and everything. And because my addiction got too out of whack and stuff, to where she couldn't handle it no more, she had to move on. And I took and I ended up moving back in my parents' house at that time. And then my addiction was so advanced at that time to where, by any means necessary, I was going to get what I wanted. And that's one of my problems. So I started committing crimes, and the crimes I was committing and stuff was felonies, they burglaries, and I was hurting people, you know. Like I was hurting my community most of all, you know. I was hurting the victims of the houses I was breaking into. I was taking and doing this and not even caring, because I didn't even care about myself at all. Did not care about myself at all. So I'd be damned if I cared about anything else, you know. And these were all means in order to stay in my active addiction. And I take and I ended up getting caught, and I get a prison number for it. In prison, I get there and I get 4 years. And when I went to prison and stuff, like I knew what I was doing was wrong. Like I have this conscience, you know, like that telling me what I was doing was wrong, but I still couldn't control from wanting to do it. And that was crazy for me. But coming into prison, I knew I had a problem, but I didn't think it was an addiction problem. I literally thought I was had a problem with one particular drug, and it was heroin in the needle. And it talks about that a lot in the in our literature and stuff about like how we identify with just one specific drug, you know, and we don't think that we have problems with others and stuff. So that's what I thought my problem was. So I didn't do nothing about my addiction. I go to prison and I do 4 years, and I come out and I'm abstinent from drugs and stuff. I'm not clean or nothing like that because I don't have no recovery in my life. So I don't believe that you can really be recovered if you don't have recovery. So I come out and I'm clean from mind alternating substances and stuff. But at the same time, you know, like I still don't identify. This entire time I'm in there and stuff, I say, I'm not going to do this. Or I remember when I was talking to my son, I was doing it. When I was talking to my son on the phone, who I only got talked to once a week because phone calls are so expensive, I said, I'm going to do all these things with you when I come home. I'm going to be a better dad. You know, I'm going to be a different person, all, making all these imaginary dreams and stuff, you know, and not being able to keep to it. And I remember I was in a halfway house, like transitioning from prison to coming home. And I got a pass. And on my very first pass, I come home. And the very first thought that comes through my mind when I walk through my parents' house was, A, this is no longer my home. It felt different to me. And B, got in the refrigerator and got a beer out. That was the very first thing I did, you know? And at the time, you know, I couldn't identify with that or nothing. But today I look back and stuff and I see how strong my addiction really is. I see how my thinking and my progresses and stuff. So I take and I continue to drink a little bit, you know, when I go home on the weekends and stuff. And then I get out of the halfway house and I take and I get my own place and I get a job and everything. And I'm starting to buy alcohol every night on the way home from work, you know, drinking alcohol and stuff and drinking and driving and stuff. But I don't think that it's a problem or nothing because I got my own house. I'm paying the bills. I'm taking care of my family and stuff. That's what I believe. You know, that's my belief system at this particular point in time. So it progresses, man. Addiction progresses. Like if I don't maintain my recovery and continue working on recovery, I'm working on a relapse. So it progresses into a different form. You know, addiction comes in different ways. You know, if it's not the drugs and the alcohol, it's in different forms and stuff. And mine came in the form of a woman. And I took and I ended up meeting up with my daughter's mom, my ex-wife, and she liked to get high and stuff, you know. So I was very vulnerable, you know, like to the point to where like when we was getting drunk and stuff, and we took and she had some weed and everything, like I felt comfortable enough to smoke weed because like I was telling you, coming out of prison, I thought my only problem was the heroin and the needle. As long as I don't do that, I'm good, you know. So I take and I start getting high and stuff with her, and then it turns into starting to getting high on a regular basis and everything, you know, like I'm starting to get high on every weekend and then every day, and then I'm starting to buy my own weed and stuff now. And I still don't identify and stuff, and I'm like, man, like I'm okay, you know, like I'm doing fine and stuff. I'm still making money, taking care of my family and stuff. So I end up starting getting high, going to work. Well, at work one evening, I ended up having an accident. I ended up getting stuck in a machine, a roller press, and I was stuck in it for about 30 minutes. And when I came out of the machine, the ambulance was in the building and stuff, and they put me on the stretcher and they hit me with morphine that night. And when they did, it was about 6 years since I had ever touched an opiate and stuff. And when they did, it was like as if like I never missed a beat, like it literally came back like that quick to me and stuff, you know. And they put me in the ambulance and they're taking me to the hospital. And they asked me, they said, they told me, they said, you can cry if you want to and stuff. And then they said, They said, you want another shot of morphine and stuff. And the addict in me like kicks right in. Yes, I do. I was, didn't even have to ask twice, you know. Yes, I do. And for me, like going to the hospital and waking up the next morning, going through surgeries and stuff, I was at OSU for about 5 days, ended up having like three surgeries. They let me go and they had me on prescription meds, you know, Oxycontins and oxycodones. And going home, like I didn't feel like I had a problem or nothing, you know, but it teaches us in our literature that the body and the mind doesn't know the difference between a legal drug or an illegal drug, you know. And I didn't know that at the time. So when my ex-wife, when she would leave to go to work, I remember the very first day I was sitting there and I take the pills and it says take two every 4 hours. Well, I said, I wonder how four would feel. So I take four and I drink me a hot, warm cup of coffee and stuff, and I get that euphoria going down my back and stuff, you know, and it's right there again, you know. So I go on like this for about 2, 3 months, and it comes to the point to where my doctor wants to wean me off of these and stuff. So I'm in full-blown addiction, you know, and I said, like hell, you're going to wean me off, you know, like I ain't doing that and stuff, you know. And he wanted to start weaning me off, and I was like, that ain't happening. So I'm like, I'll show you, I'll hurt you, I'll hurt me, you know, like. So I was like, I know how to get what I need to get and stuff, you know. So I go back to the streets because me, like, I have active addiction brothers. My brothers are an active addiction. So I go back to the streets getting what I want to get. And it's so crazy because, like I was telling you, man, this entire time, the only thing I ever thought I really identified was the heroin and the needle. And I go back to the streets and I'm getting heroin. And I'm still justifying it in my mind to this day, you know, like, well, all I'm doing is snorting it, you know, like I'm cool, like I'm good and stuff, you know. Well, that's short-lived because about 2 weeks later, I go back to the needle. And then after that, I take and, it starts progressing into I'm starting to use all my paycheck, you know. I'm starting to pawn my things and starting to lose the things that I valued, you know, the things that I was holding myself to the point to where, like, as long as I have these, I'm good, you know, I can control this and stuff. I'll get clean, I'll get off of this and stuff. Well, just like the first time, I end up dragging my ex-wife down the rabbit hole with me, you know. And I turn her on to heroin and stuff because I want to keep her, because I don't want to lose her. I don't want to lose both of it, put it that way. I cherish the drug more than anything. So I take and I drag her down this rabbit hole with me and get her addicted. And I told her, I said, in 6 months, I said, we're going to be homeless. We're going to and both be going to jail. And she's like, no, it's not going to happen and stuff. Well, I end up losing my house, lost my job. Ended up going back to my old routines, you know, my old ways of thinking and stuff, like by any means necessary. So I started doing old behavior because I never corrected it the first time. So I take and I go and I start breaking into houses again, you know. And I get caught this time and they send me to prison and I got 15 years this time. So coming into prison, I was pissed off. I was pissed off because I was back in prison again. And I was pissed off that I'm going to have to do all this time and I lost everything. You know, it's just me, 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 me. Whoa, it's me, you know, not looking at the real reason, you know. And I said, you know what? I said, the first time I did it, like I did it the way it was supposed to be, you know, I didn't get no tickets. I did everything it was supposed to be and it didn't get me out a day early. So I said, this time I'm coming in, I'm doing it my way. I said, I'm going to take and I'm getting drunk, I'm getting high, whatever I want and stuff. You know, I'm gonna do this my way. So my higher power's got a funny way of showing me my way. So I get there and I'm about 2 months into prison and stuff, and I go through a central reception center, and then I get to my home prison, and I'm there for probably about 3 days. And my bunkie says, hey, he says, you wanna get high? And I said, you know what? Yes, I do. So I take and we ended up buying a joint together and I pinned it twice. And I was so paranoid. You talk about paranoid. Like I was so paranoid. Like I did not enjoy it at all. Like I literally crawled up in my bed because I didn't know nobody, you know, like I was a new environment, you know, like it was just complete chaos around me and everything, and just did not like it at all. I crawled up in my bed and put the covers over my head and just lay there and stuff, you know. Well, they end up having a shakedown that weekend where they come in and clear out the whole dorm, and they took us all to the gym and gave us all pee tests. And I take and I go down there, and I'm probably about, it's been probably about 5 hours before, like since like I woke up and everything, and I just got to pee so bad. Well, my bunkie, he ends up going in there and he pees clean. I'm like, yes, I got this. We're good, you know. So I go up in there. Well, I end up peeing dirty. My very first ticket ever in prison, my only ticket ever in prison. And that was my eye opener. That was they talk about spiritual awakenings and stuff. That for me was my spiritual awakening. That was the time in life where I literally looked in the mirror, the man in the mirror, and said, you know what? I can either continue on this chaos for the rest of my life, or I can change what I do and start learning to live a new life, you know? And I didn't know what that meant or nothing, you know? I didn't know what the process was or nothing. So I said, man, I said, God, I said, what didn't I learn the first time that I need to learn this time? What do I need to change about my behavior that I need to stay home stuff, you know? So they ended up putting me in a program, and in the program it was suggested to us to go to meetings, and we had to go to 2 meetings a week. And that was where I was really first introduced to NA, to Narcotics Anonymous. And the meetings we held there was pretty good meetings and everything. And when I did it at first, like when I first came into the fellowship, I was very, very uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. Like, and today I identify that with just being like, because that's my disease inside me, my addiction telling me like these ain't like-minded people like me right now, you know? And what's so crazy about that is today, like if I get around a group of individuals that are like an active addiction and stuff, you know, like that are talking about drug stuff, I feel very uncomfortable around that today. It's crazy how it flips. It really is. But that's how I know that I'm growing. You know, that's how I know that I'm starting to develop more and more. So I get into the meetings, and a lot of things are talked about, you know, sponsors, get a sponsor, get a sponsor, you know. And I said, well, what do you look for in a sponsor and stuff? How do you find a sponsor? How do you ask somebody to be a sponsor or whatnot? Because that was all the suggestions, you know, like get to meetings regularly and get a sponsor, you know. That was what was suggested to me. So one of the guys told me, he says, well, he says, you know, when the individual goes up and he talks and he says, and everybody gets up and gets coffee or goes to the pee and stuff, whenever they're talking, he says, you don't want that guy. And I was like, all right. So I said, all right, I understand this. So I ended up asking a person, you know, that I felt like when he got up there, like he was really living the NA way, like he had found a new way in life. And I said, I don't know what he's got, but I said, I want that, you know. So I ended up going to this individual and stuff, and we was two totally different people. Like he did not like me at all at the beginning and stuff, you know. Like he was like, man, he's like, he thought I was like one of them like preppy kids, like no way I'll mess with you and stuff, you know. So I said, I need a sponsor. I said, will you sponsor me? And he says, yeah. And he put me through it, man. Like he really did. And the beauty of being in the environment that I was in to where I was able to do it was I lived with my sponsor. Like we literally lived in 100 foot from each other and stuff. So it wasn't like you could call him on days we had a meet and stuff, be like, well, I'm out doing this and stuff, you know. We literally lived beside each other. So I couldn't bullshit him, you know. And that's what I needed. I needed a man to teach me how to be a man. I really needed somebody to say, hey, it's what we got to do today, you know. Like, and there was a lot of times like I feel like I really didn't want to do it and stuff, you know, like really questioning and stuff. But he was there to support me all the way through. So starting to work the steps with this individual and everything, and we ended up starting to develop a bond and stuff, you know, a deeper relationship and everything. And I was always scared about the fourth and fifth step, everything. You always hear about the fourth and fifth step and everything, you know. And today I have sponsees myself, and I always tell them the stuff, you know. By step two, if you don't feel like you're with the right person, it's okay to get a different sponsor, you know. Like If you don't feel like you're making that connection to where you feel comfortable enough with somebody after step two, then it's okay, you know. But with me, like, I really started to develop a relationship, you know, and it grew way beyond what I ever thought it would, you know, with my sponsor, you know, my relationship with him. Like, today, like, he is truly close, very, very close to me. And I come up on my first life on life terms when it come when I'm going through the steps and stuff. And like I was telling you, my ex-wife, she ends up going to prison with me. When I was telling you, I dragged her down the rabbit hole with me and stuff. She ended up being my co-defendant and going to prison. And I get the John Deere letter the one day from prison and stuff, saying like, I want a divorce, I don't want to be with you no more and stuff. And you talk about like feelings, like, and these emotions are so strong and stuff, man. Like, that was the first time in my life I literally felt like I was dope sick without using dope. Like, I was literally in the fetal position and stuff, and I figured out how strong the mind really is, like how strong it really is. So I said, you know what? I said, the one number one rule in Narcotics Anonymous is, no matter what, don't use. As long as I don't use, I said, I'll be fine. So I ended up starting to step outside of my sponsor even and stuff, you know, and I ended up forming this relationship with another individual in the fellowship and everything. And I start talking to him about it, you know. And I just felt really comfortable and stuff, talking to him about like what I'm going through and stuff. And I'm talking for weeks on end and months on end and stuff, you know. Like, I was going to this individual and stuff, and like, it would feel like I'd take two steps forward with the situation, and then all of a sudden, like, stuff would hit me and I'd take a step back and stuff. And I would go to him and I would open up and I would talk to him again and stuff. And he was always there just for a listening ear, man, just to listen. And I said, man, I said, I'm so sorry. I said, I can't believe I keep talking about the same thing. And he says, you know what? He says, it doesn't matter. He says, that's what it's for. He says, that's what it's all about and stuff, man. He says, this is the reason why this fellowship works so well. And I continue just talking to him and everything. And eventually, hindsight, when I look back and stuff, I finally gained acceptance of where I was at in life, you know. I gained acceptance on who I am as an individual and stuff, you know. And when I learned that, man, I learned to be able to start moving forward with life instead of always holding back. And that was due to this fellowship. That was due to the brotherhood and stuff, you know, of one act helping another. And it was so crazy because he told me later on, years later and stuff, he says, you don't know how much you helped me when you was doing that with me, you know, because he ended up having to go to a through a similar situation and stuff, you know. And I ended up finding out that I have another kid when I was locked up, and I had never met him before, and he was a and I had a son. And he took and my son's mother ended up reaching out to me because he wanted to know who his dad was, ended up reaching out to me and stuff out of the blue, and started having a relationship and stuff with him and everything. And at the same time, this man that was that helped me out early in my recovery and stuff ended up going through life on life's terms, where he ended up losing both of his kids. Like, his ex-wife took both of his kids away from him. And they was adopted by the man that she was with and stuff. So he ended up coming to me and started talking to me about it and stuff. And he was gaining hope and strength through me and stuff, you know, with me being able to rekindle my relationship, you know, with my child and everything, you know. Like, he was gaining hope off that. And it was like so powerful when you see it come full circle like that, you know. It's amazing. So I continue to work the steps, and with my sponsor and stuff. And I take and I'm real comfortable in recovery today, you know. Like, I go to meetings regularly. I love meetings. I love meeting with my sponsees. I get so much joy out of helping sponsees, you know, like seeing the miracle actually happen today, you know, because this is so crazy that, like, for me personally, like, I would have never thought in a million years, like, an addict like me would be able to sit in a room right now with all you great people and stuff, you know, being able to talk about, like, today I don't use and I don't have the desire to want to use ever again, you know. Never would have thought in a million years. Never. Like you would have told me, I was like, you're crazy. Like never. But it works. It really does work. So I continued to work the steps with my sponsor and stuff. And then things are going good and stuff, you know, and then life happens, you know, like things, situations happen and stuff. And I get uprooted, get sent out of the prison I was at for 7 years, very comfortable there and stuff, you know, in my recovery and stuff. I get sent out of there to a new prison. Night and day, complete chaos. I get put in this dorm where it's like go from cell to an open dorm, no privacy whatsoever, and just everybody is using. Like I'm not exaggerating. Everybody is using, and everybody's on chaos. Everybody's stealing everything, you know. And I'm like, man, I'm like, I'm at, so what do? I buckle down and I start meditating. I start reading my literature and I start reaching out. You know, I start finding meetings and I pray. You know, like I say, like, what am I supposed to learn in this, God? Like, what is this situation here supposed to teach me and stuff? You know. And because I don't think it by no means does my higher power ever want to tempt me or anything like that. He doesn't want to see where I'm at. He doesn't want to test my recovery or nothing like that. You know, it's just life on life's terms. Shit happens sometimes. We can't explain why it happens, but we got to deal with it when it does happen. Whenever it comes down the tailpipe, we got to deal with it. So I was there for about 6 months, and I tried and tried and tried like hell, you know. I said, I got to get out of here, you know. So I used the number one rule. I didn't use, and I kept consistent with what I was trying to do, and I was trying to get out of there and stuff. So I ended up taking and getting moved. I ended up getting a transfer in and getting moved. And I was fortunate enough to come to this facility that I'm at today, and I've been here for a little about a year now. And great facility. And it was exactly where I believe that like, you're going to be where you're at when you're supposed to be there. And I get here, and this facility has got a lot going for it as far as recovery goes. If you're an addict and you're in prison and you're in this facility, you have a lot of opportunities to get what you need to get and stuff. And I'm very grateful for that. We got meetings every day. We got individuals working with individuals inside of here, you know. Sponsorship is something we're starting to develop a little bit more and stuff on, you know, like we need a little bit more help as far as like outside sponsees, but sponsorship is something that we're starting to develop a little bit more on. So I take in November, I take in I end up getting a court escort to back to court for judicial release. Well, I get back to court and I'm gonna get judicial release. I'm thinking I'm going home before Thanksgiving and everything. And doesn't happen. I get into the courtroom and the timing's off. So there's stipulations on when you're supposed when I can file and things like that. So they said you're gonna have to go back to prison and do some more time, and then when you're able to, you can come back and stuff. So this is the one is too many, and a thousand is never enough. So I get in there and I'm sitting in the county jail, and they have nicotine strips, little tobacco strips and stuff, you know. A drug is a drug is a drug, you know. So I'm sitting there and I'm in this funk, you know, like in this mindset, you know, of like, man, like I was going home, is my mom's birthday, and I was like all excited and stuff. I was gonna get to see my kids for Christmas and stuff, you know. Well, just ain't the way it happened, you know. Something else happened. So I take and I'm sitting there, and it's legal in there, you know, like nicotine strips are legal in there. You guys are talking about like ashtrays and stuff. That's crazy in here because we ain't allowed to smoke or nothing like that in here. Like you can't have cigarettes and nothing like that. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what? I'm like, nobody's gonna know. That's my first thought. First thought's always wrong. You know, I was like, that's bullshit because I'm going to know, you know. And I take and I'm sitting there and I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what? I said, man, I said, I've come a long way since where I began at in this recovery and stuff. I said, because it would have been no question in my mind, I would have took that nicotine strip just to change my mood for a second, you know, back in the day and stuff. But I said, That ain't what I'm supposed to be doing today, you know. I said, because today it's a nicotine strip, you know. When I go home, I think I can start smoking, and then it's going to turn into something else. It's just going to progress and things of that nature, you know. So that's where I'm at today. It's kind of jumped around a little bit there. This program does work. I do work it. I live this program. Recovery has got a special place in my heart. It really does. I feel so honored just to be able to talk to individuals and stuff about recovery today. I feel honored to be in recovery. Man, the things that I experience in recovery today are way beyond my wildest dreams. And I haven't even been able to experience half of it yet. I ain't even been able to experience a tenth of it yet. Like, when I come home and stuff, like, to really be able to put into practice and to really see these things work and just see how much more my life has value than what it did before when I was in addiction. Just the whole thought of that process is just powerful to me, very powerful. I like how it says, like it was talking about in the Just for Today, you know, in the first step, it talks about there is victory admitting defeat. And I truly believe that. Like, I really have to surrender and I have to come to terms and admit complete defeat before I can start going upward from it. I guess just if you're an addict like me, if you keep coming back, you'll understand the miracle. You will get the miracle, but you don't ever have to use ever again. You lose desire and find a new way to live in this program. And my name is Ben Nomnack, and that's all I got.
If you would like to speak directly with a member of Narcotics Anonymous, please contact our phone line at 844-991-AZNA. Again, that's 844-991-2962.